The regular city commission meeting of April 23, 2018. Greg, did you hear that? All right, a couple of notes. Mayor Steve Leary is not available today and will not be participating. Greg Seidel, Commissioner Seidel, is out of the country and will be participating by phone, but by city charter, his vote does not count when he's not physically present. With that said, there's an amendment to the agenda. We received a notice from the applicant's attorney on the matter coming up before the commission regarding 301 West Comstock. They have recognized that there will not be a full commission here to hear their application today and have requested that their application be postponed for a hearing at the next regular city commission meeting on May 14, 2018. So those people here today.
That's item 11B, Mr. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Item 11B has been postponed until May 14. Those people here today who were expecting to provide input on that matter are welcome to stay, but that matter will not be heard today. All right, proceeding. With that change in the agenda, do I have a move to accept the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We have an invocation today from Leslie McCarrick, Winter Park Christian Church. And before she starts, I'd like to thank her for making her church available to the police for their monthly community meeting a few weeks ago.
Our pleasure.
Let us bow our heads this afternoon. O Holy One, we come into your presence on this day, thankful for the rain. It's gotten us wet today, but we sure do need it, and so we are thankful for that. And I pray that we can each one approach this meeting with thankful hearts. I ask that you be with each one that's part of the commission here, that they be able to make decisions today with wisdom and discernment. Be with those that have things to present this afternoon before the commission, that you give them also wisdom and help them to make clear their concerns. I thank you for all of these people and their dedication to this community and helping to make this continue to be a wonderful place in which to live. We lift up this prayer in the name of the one who indeed has many names. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Well, we've already approved the agenda given my insistence on mentioning the withdrawal of one of the applicants for today's meeting. Moving on to the mayor's report, I have no report. The city manager's report.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Troy Attaway to come up and give you an update on the stormwater project that's coming up. And while he's doing that, I wanted to let the commission and the public know that the Orange County Planning and Zoning Board unanimously denied the racetrack project. So that project appears to be off the agenda now. So
does it not go forward to the commission?
I don't know. Where's Jeff? I don't know the answer to that.
This certainly can appeal. It can appeal regardless of whether it actually automatically. I think it is, it goes to them, but either side can appeal.
Can you find that out for us?
Yes, we'll find that out for you. Thank you.
Getting the slide up here for you. So Randy asked me just to kind of give just an update on one of the things that we do on an everyday basis. In public works, we're always looking at things that could be done better, things, problems that we have, and how can we solve those problems. And sometimes they're big problems, and sometimes they're small problems. Sometimes the big problems such that it takes years to solve that problem. I kind of wanted to bring up. So what you have in front of you is a map. We call it the drainage basin map. And if you see all the little squiggly lines, those are contours. And that's kind of how we understand how land is sloped. And if a drop of water falls in a particular place, where is it going to go? We use these kind of maps to help us figure that out. And so this map, I'll give you a warning. In the upper left-hand corner is Lake Maitland. That's the eastern lobe of Lake Maitland. Mm-hmm. In the very bottom center is Lake Knowles. And the road that's running north and south, directly north of Lake Knowles, is Temple. And as you know, we've kind of been looking at Temple. How can we make that flow better? We have a little area of Temple called Sharon Place, which is a hole, and it's served by an electric stormwater pump, such that when it rains, the only way that water is evacuated from that area is through a pump. Also, if you look in the upper left-hand corner, the small lake is the Racquet Club Lake. It is also only served with an electric pump. Okay. And you know what happens when we have a big storm and we lose electricity? There's no more pump unless you bring a generator and wheel it around. The black lines are what we call drainage basins. These are major drainage basins. Everything that falls within that upper black line is going to flow into a drainage system that drains down Temple, that drains down Whitesell, and goes into Lake Maitland, basically in the upper left-hand part of your screen. Right. The smaller black area is a drainage basin along Via Logano. And then consequently, I didn't show all of the drainage basins, but everything to the right of the black line is flowing east down the tree streets and getting into Arbor Park.
Right.
The Arbor Park ditch, everything that's flowing south is getting into Lake Knowles. So we had a couple of problems that we wanted to solve. How can we make Temple drain better? How can we get off of these electric pump stations? The one at Sharon Place, which is in the upper central part of this drawing, and then also the Racquet Club. How can we get off of that electric pump station? Well, we started thinking about this, and when the Racquet Club was being redeveloped, right, we said, is there some opportunity to get a gravity system, right, from the Racquet Club pond to Lake Maitland? And we reserved a drainage easement all the way across the north part of their property for something that we could do in the future. Well, we started doing a lot of checking. How could we get a pipe from the Racquet Club pond to Lake Maitland? Also, we did some analysis. What do we need to do to the drainage system that serves Temple? Is it undersized? Are there not enough inlets? And then, if we want to drain the low area called Sharon Place, I want that to be gravity. I don't want to have to rely on electricity. Well, we have a plan, and we're actually going to implement this plan in the next month or so, where a big drill company is going to come in and drill a pipe from the Racquet Club pond into Lake Maitland. And I'll show you a picture of that at the very end. But that is going to allow then for that electric pump station to not be electric anymore. It can now be gravity. And it also frees us up to possibly put some, utilize the Racquet Club pond for some additional storm water. And so in looking at all the different ways that you can solve this, can we go down to Via Logano? We looked at all the aspects of that. Can we take some part of it to Lake Knowles? Could we take any part to the east? Well, we don't want to take it to the east because we're trying to solve that problem. So zoom in a little bit to the next slide. So what I did is I kind of zoomed in the upper right part, you'll see the Sharon Place, kind of the hole in the ground. And this is showing, how now we're going to use a pipe system to drain from that Sharon Place down Sharon Road to Tom Gurney and then into the Racquet Club pond. And then you can see the dark line, which is the pipe that we're going to put in from the Rapid Club Pond to Lake Maitland. And down below you can see those squares. Those are additional inlets that are on the existing Temple outfall system. And so by having these parallels, we're going to be able to drain Sharon Road by gravity. We're going to be able to peel off some water that's currently going down Whitesell, and we're going to be able to take that into our new pipe system, so we won't have to upgrade as much of the existing Whitesell system. So just wanted to go to the next slide, just kind of give you an update on all the things that we think about and how we look at things and trying to get the most bang for the buck. This is more of that pipe alignment. And then if you go to the next slide, that is actually the drill rig that's going to come in and drill that big pipe between the Racquet Club Pond and Lake Maitland. We're going to have to, it's actually going to sit in the middle of Via Tuscany, the road. It's going to shoot all the way across the pond through the hill all the way to Lake Maitland.
Wait, say that again. I'm getting a picture.
It's okay. Going to sit in Via Tuscany. It's okay. Going to point west.
All right.
And it's going to drill basically through the pond, through the hill on the other side of the pond, and come out at Lake Maitland. And then we're going to take a pipe. When it's going to pull that pipe back in.
Got it.
And that's.
How far is that?
It's about 650 feet, something like that. So this is a very large machine.
Wow.
But this is not the biggest machines. There are machines that are much bigger than this too. So, but it'll be the biggest one that we've seen around.
There'll be
around
a lot of advance advertisement of this before it happens.
And this is part of what the purpose of this.
Right.
So the Tuscany will be blocked for how long?
I think, is it a week, Don?
Yeah.
About a week. We will. It's still at least a month out. So we'll when we hone in on that date, we will definitely let everyone know. And
we're using this same. This is the same rig that's being used. Oh no.
No, this is smaller rigs that we're working on some of our other outfalls as well.
So we rent these rigs. We don't own this.
Correct. Rig. That's correct.
Well, we hire a company that's going to use this rig because we don't know how to use it either. So anyway, just wanted to give you an update on some of the things that we're working on and how we're going to kill three birds with one stone with this particular project. So
that concludes my report.
All right, next up is 7A, parking strategies.
City attorney's report.
They've got different things on different pages here. Well, the city's attorney's report wasn't on there, so let's put it on there. Mr. Arderman, do we have anything to report?
Pass, Mr. Vice Mayor.
Thank you very much. Okay, then we have 7A, the parking strategies report from Kinley Horn. Do we have anyone here who's going to help us out?
Good afternoon again. So this item is just to give you all an update on the first phase of a parking code research. If you all remember, as part of our parking strategies last November, this is part of what you all tasked us to run away and take a look at. So Brett Wood here with Kinley Horn has yielded the first phase of the results of that, and so he's going to go through a quick PowerPoint and give you all an opportunity to give your comments and feedback.
Okay, so as Kyle mentioned, this is one of the first steps that we've undertaken as part of the parking strategy that we did last year. And I understand y'all have done a few things with technology investment and those types of things as well, but coming out of the gate, one of the first things we wanted to do was look at how...
I'll put the mic closer.
Starting off from that strategy, one of the first things we wanted to do was help you evaluate how parking codes needed to look for the city of Winter Park and various sub-areas within the city. And so one of the first steps we've done as part of this evaluation was to look at peer cities who represent some facet that may reflect some element of Winter Park, as well as doing a data analytics exercise that looks at your existing code versus a few of those peer cities versus national trends to give us a sense of where your code may be from a parking requirement perspective today. And this is a first step that then allows us to begin to look at what goes into a rewritten code as part of the modernization process. So our first step was, again, looking at some peer cities. And just to give you a sense of that exercise, we selected six peer cities, a few here in Florida, a few that are a little bit more nationally prominent, and a few that reflected communities that have an intensive entertainment core that bring a large draw not only from within the community but from neighboring areas outside of the community into that entertainment core, much like Park Avenue or some of the things you're seeing in Hannibal Square or Orange Avenue. Just a quick overview of some of those piers. Delray Beach was one of the piers that represented a little bit more local flavor for Florida, largely because of their entertainment district and some of the parking challenges they have seen there. St. Armand's was another Florida-based pier that we looked at, a little bit more retail in nature and less of the restaurant nature that you are seeing or that Delray may be seeing. But again, some interesting challenges and a budding parking management strategy that's coming along, much like here. As we got outside of the state of Florida, Davidson, North Carolina represented another suburban area with an intensive demand draw for their Main Street corridor. Not quite as advanced as Winter Park, but still seeing some interesting challenges. Asheville, North Carolina, slightly larger in scale, but a very regional draw that brought in a lot of entertainment, event type demands. And they also have been working on their parking code for quite some time and had a few more advanced strategies that we could evaluate. Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, which is a suburban fringe of Charleston, but does have a historic downtown core that draws a lot of people. And then Highland Park, Illinois, which is, again, another suburb of a larger city, but they are served by commuter rail that connects Highland Park and Chicago. And we felt like this might be a good example should the SunRail ever evolve into a higher intensity commuter rail. So the exercise that we undertook with those peers was to evaluate their current off-street parking requirements in relation to the City of Winter Park's off-street parking requirements. And I won't go through every number in this chart, but the first column on the left-hand side of the screen is the Winter Park values as they are stated today in your ordinance and off-street parking requirement code. And then as we go through each of the different communities, there are comparisons of what their code looks like for community-wide, as well in a few cases in their central business district, which represents the more walkable urban core. And in many of those places, their central business district rates are considerably lower than their community-wide rates. I will point to the column on the far right, which is the average of the peer cities, and we just aggregated those six communities into a set of rates that represent studio apartments, one-bedroom apartments, two-bedroom apartments, three-bedroom apartments for this particular code element. And along the bottom, we did a quick comparison of what that peer city average would require from a code requirement standpoint versus what your current code would require. So for multifamily housing, your current code would require about 496 spaces based on current configurations in the Park Avenue area, and peer cities would be about 316 spaces. So there's a 170, 180 space differential between what they would require and what you would require. The next category that we looked at was retail, and Winter Park today is about 4 spaces per 1,000 square feet. If we look at the peer cities for their community-wide ratios, it's about 3.8 per 1,000 square feet, so not far off from where you are. But when you look at central business district ratios, it was about 2.75, so almost a full space per 1,000 square feet different than the City of Winter Park. And again, along the bottom, if we look at those comparisons, they would require about 758 spaces. You would require about 1,100. So about 300 to 350 spaces difference. For retail. When we look at the restaurant parking minimums, your current parking minimum by code is 20 per 1,000 square feet, and that's for the first 50% of patron space. And then the peer city average is about half of that, so 10.1, or CBD rate of about 5.4. And so when we look at, if it was built, if parking was built to code for restaurant uses, you would be at about 925 spaces versus a peer city average of about 251. The one thing to point out with restaurant code, you do have the variance that allows for non-provision of parking for retail uses that are converted to restaurant, which is distinctly different than many of the other communities that we looked at. It is something that is probably needs to be a consideration in future rewrites of this code. And we'll get into that in a second towards the end. In terms of general office, right now you're at 4 per 1,000 square feet for your general office, and the peer city averages were about 2.6 for central business district parking and about 3.1 for overall community-wide. And that netted about a 300-space difference in the total number of spaces your code would require versus the peer cities. And then finally, for hotels, you're requiring about one space per room, and the peer city average was about one space per room. So you're right in line with the peers that we selected in terms of those parking minimum requirements. I will point out we looked at every category that's in your code currently against these peers. These seem to be the most prevalent types of uses that you're seeing in your kind of more developed areas. So we focused on those for the purposes of this presentation. But in the packets that we've delivered to staff, there's a more thorough explanation of all of the parking requirements that are off street. Finally, when we look at the peers, we also looked at other code elements that they may have that you currently do not have that look at some more overlay type reduction potentials for urban areas. So when you look at the reduction for central business districts, there were a few that did not require any parking for the central business district. Basically, they had no minimum parking requirements. And in that case, they leave it up to the development community to build the amount of parking that is needed. As an example,
did you take into consideration the parking exclusion that Winter Park has in the downtown area and in Hannibal Square?
In terms of the restaurant parking exclusion?
No, there are areas where any existing square footage, you know, is excluded. And
I'd have to go back and check to make sure we have that in there.
Because there are three places I'd love for you to take a look at. One of them is in the C1 zoning,
okay,
where it allows us to, it allows P&Z and the commission to implement shared parking. And the other are the two exclusion areas in Hannibal Square and downtown. And the conversion of retail to restaurant without increases in parking spaces. Those four little things, you just kind of keep them in your mind as you're...
Correct.
I'd like to understand what that means to us and what the impact is.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit about the shared parking element in a second. And the restaurant or the retail to restaurant conversion is definitely one of the bigger pieces that needs to be evaluated as part of the modernization. And I'll go back and make sure we've got the exclusion areas covered. So back to the no minimum parking requirement in the CBD. Asheville was one of the primary communities that we looked at, and they've been doing this for quite some time. And the response that we got from their code managers and enforcement officers was that typically private development for an office or a residential building or a large-scale retail complex is still building parking without that minimum parking requirement. They're building it to their standards rather than what the city is dictating. In some cases, that may even be more than the city would have dictated originally. Where they're seeing less of the on-site parking being built is for smaller scale restaurant and smaller scale retail at ground level that are either upfitting from a previous use or being built without on-site parking and relying on the public parking system. And they haven't seen too many negative effects of that from those types of developments. They did have a few multifamily housing units that were built without parking that ended up being problematic because the residents of those multifamily housing units tried to park on street, which became competitive with other residential areas around. Some of the other reductions for CBDs are the ability to use on-street parking as part of the supply when evaluating the parking need for developments. And so a few of those, St. Armand's and Davidson, have those built into their code. And the Delray has similar elements that you do, where there are a reduction for restaurant demands on Atlantic Avenue, not to the level of exclusions, but some reductions for those types of demands. In terms of transit proximity, Highland Park does a reduction based on proximity to available transit stations, using that as leverage to try to get more of the patrons and or employees of businesses to utilize the commuter rail. But I will point out the commuter rail is much more utilized in that area than what we've seen from SunRail. And then finally, the last line here in the comparisons is the shared parking component. And your shared parking component in your current ordinance at the community-wide level is somewhat limited compared to some of the peers, in that they will allow shared parking further distances away from businesses. It doesn't have to be on-site or directly adjacent. It just has to be provable. And they will allow for reductions for shared parking for mixed-use developments based on the Urban Land Institute's methodology. So just an overview of shared parking. If you think about it for a mixed-use development, it's going to be the sharing of more than one parking space for a restaurant and an office, because they've got differing peaks. It also works really well in urban areas or smaller walkable areas, in that it does a better job of balancing parking demand. Instead of it all needing to be on-site for specific businesses, it can be in shared supply throughout the community. And it further enhances and promotes the use of public parking spaces if they are constructed or leased. And it further allows for the movement of demands directly in front of a business to somewhere a little more centralized. You have to be reasonable about it. It has to be reasonably walkable, and there has to be a way to move people into those spaces. But the intent of shared parking is to create better balance. And that's one of the things that was a highlight of the parking strategy we did last year, was to more efficiently utilize spaces that you do have and lessen some of the burden for those primary spaces, especially along Park Avenue, where everybody's competing for the same space. So the second piece of our analytics was to take that information, as well as national parking generation standards, and do a analysis of what your current parking demand should be. And to do that, we utilized the last parking study that was completed for the Park Avenue area, which was completed a few years before we did our strategy, and relied on data that was collected in April of 2013, a few years further back than that. So April of 2013, and they did predictions based on that data they collected and national standards that they had seen in Urban Land Institute or the Institute of Transportation Engineers. So the first slide that I have up utilizes the land use mixture that was in that study as the basis for calculating how many parking spaces were needed. And the first column with the pink header is based on your current parking standards, current minimum parking standards, which says that based on that land use mixture, you would need approximately 3,446 spaces to accommodate the square footage and dwelling units in that mixture of land uses. The observed demand from the 2013 study, again April of 2013, shows that on weekday at daytime peaks, there was a demand of about 2,054 spaces. Now you'll notice it does not include the residential component. So if we take the residential out of that first column, it's closer to about 2,900 spaces that your code says you would need. But the peak that was observed is about 2,000. So you're still about 30% higher from a code perspective than what was observed during peak conditions per that study. Now, we then extrapolated that out further, and the yellow column is using Urban Land Institute shared parking methodology, and then the green columns are going through each of the peer cities and using their code. With Urban Land Institute, the peak for weekday was about 2,600 spaces. So you're within about 20% of what Urban Land Institute predicts based on your code, and 20 to 30%. And then with the peers, it varies anywhere from being within about 40% to being within about 20%. When you average it out, the demand would be about 2,500 spaces, and you're about 25% away.
Yes, sir.
I just want to point something out and request something from you. In our packet, the total parking spaces on the parking demand analysis sheet under Winter Park current minimum parking standards says 2,983, and on your slide here it says 3,446. I'd just like to know what that difference is and where it came from, and also would like to know the detail of the inventory of the total available parking spaces that add up to those numbers and where they are in the downtown area.
So, first question, the 2,900 versus the 3,400. I apologize. I may have sent the wrong presentation to staff this morning. Okay. We actually updated this after going through a round of this with Planning and Zoning Commission.
Okay.
And one of the things that we talked about was we may have over-predicted how much restaurant space was needed because your code is only required on usable space and not the back of house space. Mm-hmm. So I think there may be an over-prediction in this 3,400 of about 500 spaces. The second question, this is not actually spaces of inventory.
It's the prediction based on the code and the number of square feet we currently
correct.
Have.
So if we were to go back one slide to the observed demand, I could show you from the 2013 study where those spaces, the 2054, 1723, where those were parked based on the data that they collected. For the Winter Park minimum parking standards, that's just a theoretical amount of parking spaces that would be needed. I don't know that they've actually been built to that level, because many of your restaurant spaces didn't actually get built over the last 10 or so years.
I thought you said in the presentation it had something to do with residential. No?
No, it's the restaurant parking.
It's all restaurants. Yeah. So that differential that you're talking about didn't have anything to do with residential?
No.
Okay.
I believe your residential, your office, your retail have all been built to code requirements over
all
the
right,
past.
Got it.
Restaurant has been the sticking point. So looking at those numbers, though, versus the 2,900, you're still within about 20% of Urban Land Institute, of your peer average. The biggest difference between the peer and Urban Land Institute is the application of some level of shared parking reductions in their code requirements.
Right.
Whereas now you're simply looking at this office needs this many spaces, this restaurant needs
24/7.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So there's some ability to reduce the number of parking spaces needed by recognizing the inherent ability to share parking between the uses. And maybe one of the initial elements that allows you to modernize the code without doing too deep of a dive into lowered parking requirements. So just a few things we've learned from this initial exercise, and we'll carry forward into the second part of this project. In some of the code requirements, you're on track. In some areas, you may be overparked. There are some concerns about the retail to restaurant conversion, continuing and not providing parking on a level playing field with the rest of the types of development that may occur, either new development or redevelopment. So one of the things that we're going to look at is, are there opportunities to balance that out and let future restaurant conversions become more apt to the parking code, as opposed to being able to provide restaurant space without providing parking spaces associated with it. We did find that for most of the codes that we looked at, you're slightly over. Mount Pleasant was the most suburban parking code that we looked at, and even that had slightly lower parking minimums than Winter Park. Again, that's not to say that every code in your code needs to be reduced, but there may be opportunities to leverage shared parking, and we'll leverage some of those tools to balance parking better between uses. As we get into the rewrite of codes, we notice that many of them are overtly complicated. They look at this many spaces per the first 10,000 square feet and then more spaces after that. And really, we should just keep this as simple as possible. It needs to be predictable so that you know what you're looking for from a development, as well as the developers know how to respond to what it is that you're looking for in the code rewrite. And make it easy to understand and use it as a tool to leverage to get the right types and mixes of parking, whether it's shared or on-site, to work with the community. We think ULI is a great place to start. I think if you look at ULI, you look at its parking ratios, and you look at the application of shared parking, that may be a good jumping off point for places like Park Avenue and Hannibal Square and even Orange Avenue to some extent, to be able to look at how to require parking and provide it on site. And again, those three areas really should not be treated the same as other places in the community. Park Avenue especially is uniquely different than anything else in the community and should have code requirements and policy that is supportive of that. And that came through in the parking strategy, and I think comes through here as well as you modernize this code. So that's our presentation. Just a little about next steps. We are going to be going through some further discussion with stakeholders about how we begin to recognize what are some specific recommendations of this plan. We don't have those yet. This was simply meant to be informational to give you a sense of what we've seen in the first data dive that we've done associated with this project.
Thank you. Any comments or questions?
I have a question about balance.
Okay.
I think what I'm hearing from you is that Winter Park in the downtown area requires developers to provide more parking than other communities. And yet, at the same time, I'm hearing certain segments of our population saying that we need to build additional supply. Will you be addressing that reality as move forward?
So there's a couple of pieces to that question. Yes, from the first data analytics we've seen, there are elements to the Park Avenue area that have likely been treated a little more suburban than they should have and have potentially overbuilt parking in certain cases. The flip side of that is, and we've talked about it a couple times, the retail to restaurant conversion has largely utilized whatever overage that may have been available from the public and even getting into some of the private sector side because of the desire to incentivize restaurants coming to Park Avenue. So we want to make sure that where restaurants have been utilizing all of the supply and other uses may have been overbuilding, we begin to balance those. That's one, is balancing the requirements and the responsibilities, but also balancing existing supply that may be underutilized. And it, believe it or not, it's out there. It's just not in places people want to park. And then if you do build more parking, how do we make sure to position the parking spaces that are being built for success?
Where
they're needed and that people are going to utilize them. And one of the ways to do that is through development requirements, incentives that allow for shared parking and promote the use of those spaces, whether public or employee, for those spaces. And we'll certainly get into strategies that could be included in the code modernization today or a little further down the road that would help to support that.
Any other questions? Mr. Seidel?
The other cities that you've shown in this list, is there a perception that they have ample parking, or is there a perception that they don't have enough parking? Did you get any gauge for that when you were looking at them?
We've actually spoken to four of the six, just to follow up, about how those code changes were received and whether or not it positively or negatively impacted parking supply. Several of them went into code changes with what they would have described as ample parking, and now that parking is a little more utilized, or the word we keep using is balanced, but we're promoting more efficient use of spaces that are being built. And so in those communities, the move to lower parking requirements or to push parking demands a little further away from business has better utilized those spaces and allowed the private sector and the public sector to come together a little bit better to utilize those spaces. Asheville, as an example, has indicated to us that they are now in a position where they've got parking challenges, largely because they have higher demands coming into their downtown than they had 3 or 4 years ago, and they're looking to build public supply to support that and looking at options to have that be kind of a public-private type agreement or arrangement, either with development or through things like a fee-in-lieu program that may help the business community help support the building of those spaces.
Anything else from the commission? Thank you very much. We look forward to the rest of your analysis and report.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and could you just check with staff and make sure that
the actual report you wanted us to see is sent to us?
Yes, I will double check. We'll send you the right one.
Thank
Sorry
you.
About that.
No, it's not your fault, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Just before we go on to 7B, just another announcement that item 11B, the request of CIDGEN for conditional use approval under cluster housing provisions of the R2 zoning at 301 West Comstock has been postponed until the next city commission meeting at the request of the applicant. So those here intending to comment on that and participate in the discussion, please know that you're welcome to stay, but that specific issue will be addressed in 2 weeks. On to, how did I get the wrong one again?
Deidre.
I know it's Deidre, but I have the wrong, yeah, thanks. Somehow I got that again. It mysteriously appeared.
Oh, there's a good side and a bad side.
Is that what it is? All right, next we have 7B, a presentation from Ms. Deirdre McNabb, quote, why is solar smart for cities? Welcome, Deirdre.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and we appreciate you giving us just a few minutes on the agenda today on an item that we are really excited about at the League of Women Voters and many other organizations around the county as well as the state. So, yes, and you're wearing a little bit of yellow there. Thank you very much. Okay. So this is a really exciting time in clean energy and for solar, and the reason is because the economics make such good sense. At the turn of this most recent century, we saw natural gas begin to substitute for coal. And in the last 20 years, what we've seen is renewable clean energy like wind and solar are now cheaper even than natural gas. So we're seeing really a very fast revolution in energy taking place. And obviously, not only consumers, but cities and states are looking at how they can be sure they are paying as little as possible for energy. So with no more delay, let me jump right into it. I want to start out by saluting the City of Winter Park for your recent commitment to taking 7% of your energy from solar sources. That's a big deal, and we really do salute you for that. That's very, very exciting. So how does solar help cities? And obviously, the single most important area is it helps them save money, and it adds jobs. Solar jobs in Florida are now growing faster by 10 times that of regular jobs in the state. Quite extraordinary. And it also helps provide energy while not dirtying our air and our water. And for those of you that may not have been aware, last week in Orlando, we were in the red alert for ozone because we had so many days without rain and the heat and the sunshine. So that is a very dangerous health condition for citizens. Another exciting reason is that cities are paying attention to this is that voters love solar. The statistics on voter support is very, very high. They get it. And by the way, all of us in Florida and all of you know very well, we live in the Sunshine State. Yes. So this is just a partial list of the organizations just here in Orange County that are supporting solar energy and pushing the county and the city to do more in the solar department. I'm going to talk in a moment about Orlando, but this little magnetic placard was given to me last Friday at the First Green Bank by employees from Orange County who are now supporting their fifth and sixth solar co-op. And you only have like two or three more days to sign up to get a quote, by the way, if you're interested in putting solar on your house and you live east of I-4, because that co-op will close shortly and then it goes to the west side. So the county, under the sponsorship of Mayor Teresa Jacobs, who, by the way, put solar on her roof using the co-op, and she said the only thing she hates about it is the fact that her husband never stops looking at the dashboard to see how much money they're saving. But this is what they're giving out at the information sessions. So all across the state, and you'll hear in a moment, we are doing solar cooperatives, and we've got hundreds of organizations from chambers of commerce to Kiwanis clubs to religious organizations that are jumping on board. So cities are expanding solar very quickly. Obviously, that's where most of the country's population lives, but we've seen an extraordinary annual growth rate of almost 60%. And just last year, the U.S. Conference of Mayors approved the resolution saying that cities should commit to 100% renewable energy by some date in the future. So you see a vast number of mayors there. We see that happening across the country. We have a number of mayors right here in Florida that have already made that commitment, including Orlando, which is the next slide. And if you look very carefully, you can see Buddy Dyer right there in front of the city seal. He and unanimously the city commission made the commitment to go ready for 100. I believe it's by the year 2040, with an even much sooner date to make all city buildings 100% solar. So that's a very exciting commitment. St. Pete, Sarasota, Miami-Dade, and other cities have been joining them on that. So today, we are very fortunate in the city of Winter Park to have Chris Stenger, who is the Director of Sustainability, and a terrific committee of committed citizens who care deeply about this and are working endless hours to come up with good ideas to present to you. So it's my hope I'm going to run through a few suggestions that I hope you will direct, and many of them are obviously already being looked at by our Director of Sustainability and our committee to come back to you with recommendations. For your interest, Florida last year had the highest residential growth rate in solar anywhere in the country with 110%. The utilities, in fact, are growing their solar, and the fact that they've come to you offering to hold the price and sell you a lot of solar shows their commitment. But more pressure is needed, and because the utilities, including the one that you buy your energy from, or I should say we as a citizen of Winter Park, they make their money based on what they bill. So if their billings go down, they make less money. And that's why it's important for citizens and cities to keep the pressure on. And experts say Florida should be among the top three. Why? Because of our sunshine, but also because we use so much electricity for our air conditioning. So quickly, Florida law, everybody has the right to put solar on their roof in Florida. It doesn't matter whether you're a homeowner or your city even tries to prevent you. It requires utilities to buy back and credit both cities and consumers for their unused electricity. And in the last few years, we've seen overwhelming voter approval to continue and expand no exemptions on sales tax, property tax, and other issues for businesses and for consumers. Jim Fenton, who's the director of the UCF Florida Solar Energy Center, says solar is now cheaper than fossil fuels. This is a really big deal, and he says it's even cheaper with storage. The price of storage is coming down very, very rapidly for batteries for homeowners, so we're going to see a pretty significant decline in that area. The 30% federal tax credit, which is important to consumers, has a few more years to go, but only in 18 and 19 will it be the full 30%, and then it begins to scale down. So that's important for you to know, even though the city can't take that tax credit. Businesses that you might be able to buy solar from, however, can. So that's important. I wanted to point out Babcock Ranch. I don't know if you've heard of it, but this is a large development in Collier County, and what is their claim to fame? They're putting solar on all their commercial buildings, so they are going to be offering, and it has been selling well, a clean community based on clean, green energy, and that is in partnership with NextEra as well. Solar, this is a very important element. I believe one of your largest expenses for electricity in the city is the wastewater plant. Obviously, other cities find the same situation. You can see two examples of cities in other parts of the country that are using solar for this reason. And again, I want to salute the city of Winter Park. I know you're already looking at this, and I look forward to hearing what the Sustainability Committee comes back with on this. But this is a very exciting direction to save money, and big money, that you could then use to assist your CRA or put solar panels on your new library. So there are all kinds of uses for those savings in order to help citizens, low-income areas, and more public buildings get the advantages and the savings on solar. I threw this in because we have so many retention ponds, but there is a canal in India that they have found is a great place to put solar on. And that's the exciting thing about solar right now. You go up to Massachusetts, which is ahead of us, by the way. They've got solar in the clover leaves. North Carolina, again, lots of innovative places that you see it. And Winter Park is an innovative community. We know that. So there is a parking garage. This is another fantastic place, as well as parking areas, because we know how hot it gets here. It's a way to provide shade and coolness for our citizens while also generating free electricity for us. Corporations have jumped on board. Today, Walmart announced that they are going to be 50% based on solar and clean energy now by 2025. They've just upped the ante on the number of stores that they're going to be adding it to. They get it. It makes sense. IKEA has it, I think, on every store. Whole Foods has it on most of their stores. The list, I mean, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Google have all committed to 100% clean energy. So it's exciting to see this American innovation. So what can you do to promote solar that you haven't already done in Winter Park? Number one, expand the goal that you have. I believe your goal is currently 50%. Think about joining cities across the nation to go 100. We want Winter Park to be on the cutting edge. You are already with regard to permitting, you're already the silver, but we want you to be the gold, which means cut down the permitting time and the fees even more, because that can be a big part of solar fees. Use it on all the city's buildings and parking garages and wastewater plants. Explore and launch community solar. I don't know what your electricity contract reads, whether you're allowed to go out to bid for other suppliers, but that's something certainly, and again, Chris Stenger and his team may be looking at that. If you can invite bids for community solar, this is a way to cut your energy bills even more, and obviously for Winter Park residents who can't put solar on their own roof like I can, because they have too much shade or the wrong perspective. And lastly, thank you for your charging stations in the city parking lot, but please add more. This is happening fast. We see many countries overseas. We see, I think Volvo just announced, as well as Subaru, that they're going to be only making electric cars in the not too distant future. So this is in order to encourage our citizens to go electric and clean up our air and clean up our streets and quiet everything down because they make no noise. Let's keep adding, please, more charging stations. So Jim Fenton again, he says the average return for a Florida homeowner who puts solar on their own house, 14% return. Anybody getting that in the market? No, I'm not. So this, he says it's the single best investment that a homeowner can make. And people of all ages and backgrounds are doing it. And I just want to end with Thomas Edison, who used to live in Fort Myers, who said when he met with Harvey Firestone and Mr. Ford to discuss the future, he said, I hope we don't have to wait until, and he really did, because I've had a couple of people say, oh yeah, you're just saying this, but he really did. I hope we don't have to wait until oil and coal run out, until we figure out how to harness the sun. Well, by golly, we know how to do it. We're doing it cheaper than natural gas. Let's keep those billions of dollars in our citizen pocketbooks, in our savings account, in our businesses, in our community, and let's save money for the city. So thank you for listening to me, and we again salute what you've done already and look forward to your future actions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions for Deirdre?
Well, Thomas Edison's sister lived in Winter Park, and her house is right up from where I live. I'll show it to you sometime. So you need to see that. You can add that slide. And the other thing is that we should provide to Deirdre a slide of the building that we have that has solar on top, because we started. But I really appreciate you coming and doing this.
You can add that. We have hundreds of volunteers. These are two of our best, of course. Right here.
And most enthusiastic.
They're the best lobbyists, I guarantee you.
But this has taken off, and I will tell you also from a political perspective, I can't remember an issue ever that I've worked on in Florida that has joined the Tea Party, the Democrats, the Republicans, the Greens, the Christian Coalition, the Sierra Club. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah,
that
common
kind
sense
of
is a way of permeating everyone's psyche.
It's fantastic.
Let's see, Commissioner Seidel, would you like to offer any comments or questions?
Nope, I'm good. Thanks.
Thank you. I'd like to say that I had a conversation on Saturday afternoon, I guess it was, with Deirdre. And I'd just like to point out that one of the challenges we face, practically speaking, is that regardless of the uptake of solar, which we all hope will happen sooner rather than later, we're all going to have to pay for the grid that the city of Winter Park owns, the grid that the other companies own through which our power is delivered today. That will never go away. And one of the challenges that we all face with our enthusiasm is to actually find a way to make all that work and be paid for and maintained properly while we convert from fossil fuel generation to other alternatives. And to that end, I'd just like to promote the idea and encourage your group to work on third-party private entities who are dedicated only to large-scale solar fields that are not directly affiliated with large-scale utilities. And the more of those that we can encourage to invest and become part of our supply chain, the more leverage there will be in the marketplace on the existing utilities who have many different things pulling at them to move faster towards solar so that they can compete with these potentially dedicated solar-only large field providers. That's my comment to you, and thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
All right, we're on to, let's see, at 5 o'clock we will take citizen comments. The consent agenda, 9A through D.
I'd like to move it.
Second.
Does anyone want to pull anything from the consent agenda? Greg? That's right, he can't do it. Are there any public comments regarding items 9A through D, the consent agenda? Hearing none and hearing none polled. Cindy, do you have to read the roll on this, right? You did not? All in favor of approving the consent agenda items A through D?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Cindy, please note a unanimous agreement on the consent agenda items. Item 10, action items requiring discussion. Lake Killarney Shores Reimbursement Agreement. This says requiring discussion. Are we approving this today?
Yes, this is an action item.
This is an action item requiring action. Who's going to present this, Don?
Yes.
Good evening. Don Marcotte, Assistant Public Works Director. I just realized sitting over there, nobody can see me on that side of the room because it seems a little high, but probably don't want to see me anyway. What you had approved in your last meeting was the plat for this subdivision. This is not typical subdivisions that you see, you know, in West Orlando or East Orlando where there's no existing infrastructure and no streets. This is a 30 lots that were replatted within an existing neighborhood with existing streets. So what's important to note that the developer could have came in and redeveloped each individual lot and provided his own stormwater retention on those lots and approached it that way. We worked very closely with the developer getting through the plat process as well as convincing him to treat this as a regular subdivision where you would provide treatment not only for the homes but the streets as well. So back in 2005, in your budget approval process, you approved projects to treat outfalls on Lake Killarney. So in this case, with existing outfalls to Lake Killarney, the developer agreed to give up one of his lots that he could have built on and provide treatment for his homes as well as the streets and infrastructure of the roadway. So what's not unusual when you develop inside of a existing neighborhood is a request to share costs when you have you know, shared responsibility of treating stormwater, the city as well as the private developer. So that's what you have before you. You have your agreement, and I have, you know, I can answer any questions that you might have about the agreement or how the share was developed.
Any questions for Don?
I'd like to move it.
I'll second it. Any questions?
Yeah. No? Peter, I have a question.
Don, can you? Sorry.
I'm sorry, Greg.
That's right.
Greg chimed in.
Yeah, we got it.
No, thank you. Don, when this was originally came before us, there was an impact fee discussion that planning and zoning had come through where they were getting several thousand dollars per lot. And at the time, you know, my thought was, well, they're converting everything from septic to sewer, and that's a great benefit. And so I was happy to release them from that P&Z proposed impact fee. And then, so I don't know in these calculations that you're doing now if that gave consideration to that, those dollars that we already relieved them of. That was my question.
Dave Zufzi is here. He could probably speak on behalf of the sanitary sewer.
I think he's actually, Commissioner, you're referring to the parks impact fees. It was a condition of the original.
It was the parks impact fee.
Right. So
my personal perception was that was, I was happy to waive that park impact fee because of the improved right. water quality in the lake.
Yeah, so Commissioners, you may recall the P&Z put a condition that they put pay $2,000 per lot in parks impact fees. The commission removed that condition because there was 29 units there before and there's 31 now. So they will be paying parks impact fees on two of them, but they got credit for the original 29. I may be off one or two, but basically. That's what he's referring to.
They will pay $4,000.
They will pay sewer impact fees as they hook up to sewer for each of these units, and then but they yeah the same thing with water impact fees. There won't be they'll get credit for the 29 units that were there before, so they won't be paying water impact fees.
I think they'll pay for two additional units, possibly.
Right. So that's what he's referring to, just to put that in perspective.
Are you satisfied, Greg, with your question?
Well, my question was, I was trying to determine if it was included in the current calculation for sharing the cost of the system that we're putting in. That's all. Like, I felt that was, in my mind, I didn't realize we were going to be doing more for them later.
Yeah, to your point, I asked that question the other day, and requested an analysis of the permit and the impact fees to be developed by to be contributed by this project, and they as projected the permit fees and the impact fees that will be paid exceed the city's share of the cost of providing the sewer system and the water system improvements. Is that correct, Don?
Dave can probably respond.
So on the water side, the city has for several years actually been attempting to upgrade the water system that was there. It was substandard water line sizes.
Yeah, so we would have to do it anyways.
We were planning to do it. So what the city has agreed to reimburse the contractor for what our cost would have been to install those upgrades. And so we're reimbursing him towards his costs for the water system. The sewer does not exist now, and the developer is paying for the cost to install sewer.
Got it. And in return, we are. All right. So the money in this sharing agreement is only going towards the water. I thought
that's correct.
No, it's going
stormwater. Well, we're paying for what we would have paid for the water distribution system as well.
But then we're also paying for
that's correct.
Yeah, and we're paying. The Public Works Department agreed to pay for half of the storm sewer infrastructure, which also includes treatment of the street.
Got it.
And you had city funds that were approved in 2005?
Yeah, there's a CIP that's been...
Why have we not done some
On the west side or south side of Fairbanks. We've acquired some property that we're going to build a stormwater treatment pond over there on Nicolette Avenue.
What percent of the approved funds have you actually spent to
do those upgrades?
I'm not sure.
What if you had to just give me a rough order of magnitude?
Well, I believe the individual lots, Troy can help me out with this, they were maybe $180,000 to $200,000 a piece. And so that's percentage-wise. There's been more additional funds allocated in 2005 for the additional outfalls, but that's what we spent today. So I think there's maybe $300 in the budget right now.
Thank you. I would like to comment. It's a basic philosophy of mine, and I do believe that when you come into a community and you develop, the developer should be willing to take care of the necessary infrastructure. And these are definitely going to be very high-end and very nice homes, and we're delighted that you're doing that. I think Winsong did that. I think many of our subdivisions do that. I was concerned when we started paying for Ravadage's infrastructure, and my concern continues. I believe that we offer an extraordinary environment for developers to participate in and an extraordinary quality of life, and I believe that as you develop new areas, to allow the developer to pay for the infrastructure is not unreasonable. So for me, I cannot support this, but I do appreciate other people's have a different perspective.
Commissioner, the reason that we agreed to participate in the water side is this is a, like Don had explained, it's an existing neighborhood that has a number of homes in there and then a number of lots that this developer is going to demolish and rebuild. But the existing infrastructure was there for water. It just was put in many years before the city purchased it, and it's below our current standard. So we had been looking to upgrade that system for quite some time, but because the road's narrow and it was outside the existing pavement, we had to work with each individual property owner to get easements, and it was a real challenge. So this actually helped us out from the aggregation of properties and made it easier for us to do the upgrade that we wanted to do for some time.
Let me try to clarify that comment. Maybe. So what you're saying is in the absence of this replatting and redevelopment, the city would have spent the same amount of or more of money that is involved here to maintain and upgrade the water system so that it was safe and effective for the residents.
That's correct. We would have spent this much money. The developer is probably going to spend some more because it's actually cheaper with using our own crews to do it. But right. We're going to reimburse him for what our cost would have been right. towards his project.
Got it.
And so are you going to upgrade for the entire community?
Yes.
Or for the entire community, all along the lake?
That's
the
correct.
Rest of the area?
The whole street and some areas just outside there.
Okay. But the area where the new homes are going or the entire existing
Both.
Neighborhood?
Both.
So, for example, the gentleman who was here at the last meeting who owns two of the lots that are proximate to and one's in the middle of this replat, his water system will be upgraded on...
That's correct.
As well.
Yes.
Right. And remembering that Winsong was an orange grove, didn't have any development.
That was a greenfield area almost, right. to speak, and there was nothing there to start with.
But it will definitely... benefit all of the
yes.
other residents.
Yeah, and provide fire protection that doesn't exist now.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, Commissioner Cooper, if your mind has not been changed via the testimony of staff, I'd be happy to run through a presentation I did outlining the exact reasons for our requests, as well as the way that the upgrades do benefit other property owners in the area. Part of our initial discussion, which has gone on, Terra Teto for the record, 215 North Yolanda Drive, Orlando, Florida. Part of the discussion we've had with staff for over a year was if we're already going in to do things that, one, are part of your CIP from 2005 in terms of stormwater, but two, are going to be functional upgrades in terms of stormwater and your sewage systems, that we would be happy at the same time to do the entirety of Country Club Drive on those areas around us as well as Ellen. So the houses that are in our area are being served in addition to the ones that are part of our subdivision. So, but for what we are doing, we'll go back and redesign our utility plans to remove all of the upgrades to other houses and then make the city go and tear the roads back up again and get easements and permits and do it all yourself. But I think it is going to be a much different cost expenditure. And you mentioned Ravadage, but in the staff report, I think it was over $190 per linear foot. Ours is about $60 a linear foot. So a very significant cost savings in terms of the infrastructure that our development would be putting in versus what you might have seen in the past. And again, I can go through the whole presentation.
The issue is just where it stops.
Sure.
You know, and that to me is very important. So I would like to clearly understand the percentage of the cost that is applicable to outside the area of where you're actually building. And if that's just the water, if that, can you help me with that? The percentage of the cost in the breakdown.
If I can answer it as far as stormwater goes. The controllable cost for installing storm sewer systems mainly is the material. And most cases, installation will be matched just about what the materials are. So we agreed to the materials because it's a hard cost. And when it comes to curbing, we agreed to half of that.
Mr. Erdman, can I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
Given that there are only three of us present, this is an ordinance.
No, I don't think it's an ordinance.
Okay, it's not.
This is an agreement.
Okay, so a majority vote of a quorum is sufficient to approve this?
Correct. Two out of the three currently present.
Thank you.
Commissioners and Vice Mayor.
Ms. Cooper, do you have any other questions or anything else you'd like to be satisfied to, one way or the other?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay. Are there any other comments from the commission on this? Any other comments from the public? We'll take public input on item 10A, Lake Killarney Shores Reimbursement Agreement. Seeing none, Cindy, do we read the roll on this one?
Yes,
not. So let's vote on the motion, and I seconded, I believe.
You did.
So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Cindy, show the vote is 2-1, and the measure passes. All right, going on to 11B, Event Center Rooftop Ad Alternates.
If you recall at the last meeting, you asked for us to bring back the rooftop for discussion and the possibility of putting in the infrastructure needed to hold it at a future date. Since there's only three of you that can vote on this tonight, I don't know if you want to push this off the next meeting, but Jim Russell is here to discuss this item with you, as well as Sam Stark, a member of our task force, wanted to address the commission on this topic also. And I have an email from the mayor I'd like to read at some point. But pleasure of the commission, if you'd like to have Jim Russell start with his presentation.
Is there anyone who would like to defer this to the next meeting in the hope we'll have five members to discuss it for the benefit of those who have an interest in it?
I think it's pretty important. I'm not uncomfortable deferring it or doing it today. I just think probably it's a pretty large item for the community. So I can go either way. I don't have strong feelings. But
I think it's it would be preferable to have all of us here to discuss this than to just have three.
I share that sense of it. Thank you for coming, Mr. Russell. Do we have to take any formal action to remove this from the agenda or to table it till the next meeting?
No, Mr. Vice Mayor, the staff will put it back on the agenda for the next meeting.
Okay, please do so. Okay, moving on to public hearings. Let's see, not quite 5 o'clock. We'll take public input again at 5 o'clock. Again, for those who may have been here to participate in the discussion of 11B, regarding 301 West Comstock, that project, the applicant has requested that our consideration of that be deferred until the next meeting, and that will not be heard tonight. So we'll discuss 11A, ordinance request of the City of Winter Park to amend various sign code regulations. Second reading.
Yes, sir. Ordinance number blank and ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending certain provisions of Article Roman numeral 4 sign regulations of the City of Winter Park Land Development Code to revise the regulations for temporary and prohibited signs, revising the definitions for signs, provide more specificity and clarity to existing sign regulations, and amending Section 1-24 Schedule of Violations and Penalties relating to snipe signs, and providing for severability, codification, conflicts, and an effective date.
And I'll move this.
I'll second it. Are there any discussions on the part of the commission? We discussed and made some changes, I think, last time around. This is the second reading. Are there any other inputs from the commission on this matter?
Mr. Vice Mayor, just to reiterate that because this is an ordinance, it takes three affirmative votes of the commission, so we will take unanimous vote of those present.
Okay, but again, as this is a city matter, if it only gets two votes in favor
you can put it
or against, we can it can come back, right?
Yes, sir.
under what terms can I come back?
Well, either y'all can table it to the next meeting when you have a full commission, or a member of the, you know, if it's 2-1, a member of the two could bring it back for reconsideration, you know, assuming that was a vote in favor of the ordinance.
In that case, I'd like to make a comment.
Sure.
I have two issues with this ordinance. One is the continued use of sandwich board signs downtown in the Central Business District. I do believe that that creates clutter and does not elevate the classy appearance of Park Avenue. We put the sandwich boards in place as an attempt to help merchants in the greater area during the downturn in the economy. And that's something I've always felt very uncomfortable that we approved. I think it's a safety issue, and I certainly think it's a clutter issue. I would not hold this ordinance up over that. I understand it has the support of the Park Avenue merchants and the Chamber of Commerce and my fellow commissioners, but I just need to say that I believe we're not doing ourselves any great service by continuing to have those signs. And the second issue is murals. Right now, we don't have any laws that address murals, and I don't feel comfortable creating laws that allow those murals. So that particular part of this law, I am comfortable being an obstructionist to passing this ordinance. I do not think the city of Winter Park should be encouraging murals on our commercial and office buildings. So I would make a motion that we prohibit murals within the Central Business District and Hannibal Square District planning areas.
So the 2 weeks ago when we talked about the murals and we made the changes.
At your suggestion.
They still don't satisfy you. You're the one that suggested
right.
these.
Right. I was
and
just trying to
all
get.
And we bought into that, Carolyn, right. And now you're that's saying right. that wasn't enough.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Now that I have a little more clout in this regard, I would like to do what's right. I was trying to compromise, but I'm not sure that was a good compromise. I think
well,
a better
I think we don't
compromise.
Vote on it tonight because you've yeah. already said you're not going to vote for
well,
it. So
well, I can make a motion. Yeah, I can make a motion that says in the central business district and the Hannibal Square area that we not allow murals on our commercial and office buildings. Outside of that, if we want to stay with the ideas that we have uncomfortable, I just really believe that once you get into putting murals on your buildings, you then have to deal with free speech, you then have to deal with messaging, you then have to deal with what is a judgment versus an observation, and I just don't want to get there. So for me, I think we should protect Hannibal Square and the Central Business District from murals. That's all. So that, if would you like me to make that in the form of a motion? That's what I would move.
Okay, I'll move to table this discussion until the next city commission meeting.
And I'll second that.
I don't believe your motion had a second.
Sorry.
We'll vote on the tabling motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion to table passes 2-1. On to 11C, ordinance to implement the updated comprehensive plan policies to the Land Development Code, specifically the policy to adopt the new medical arts zoning district and to amend R3 and PL zoning districts. This is one I also thought would probably benefit, you know, given the magnitude of this, or it's not so big as it is meaningful in terms of the change, but I thought this would be something that all five of us should review together since we have not reviewed it in detail before we vote on it. Does anybody object to tabling it?
No, I'll vote to table it because I don't support it the way it is today.
Mr. Vice Mayor,
I also do not support it. And
yes, sir.
Should go ahead and read that so that you can properly table it to the next meeting. Ordinance number blank and ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58, Land Development Code, Article Roman Numeral 3, zoning so as to adopt new zoning regulations, changing the permitted, conditional, and prohibited uses and development standards within the city by adopting a new medical arts zoning district and amending the multifamily R-3 district and parking lot PL district as necessary to implement the City of Winter Park Comprehensive Plan Goals, Objectives, and Policies document dated April 24, 2017, providing for conflict, severability, and an effective date.
Okay, I'll move to table this matter until the next meeting.
I'll second.
Greg, do you have any comments on this or the prior sign ordinance?
I thought you couldn't take comments if you table. If you do, I have some comments.
Yeah, I was going to make my sign ordinance comments in my 10 minutes at the end.
I'm sorry, Greg, go ahead.
I was going to make my sign ordinance comments in my 10 minutes at the end since it was tabled.
Okay, so you want us to table it first and then open it up for your comments? Or?
Are you able to hear me okay or no?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, at the end of the meeting, when I get my time to talk,
right.
That's when I will talk about it.
Okay, should we do that if it's been tabled?
You can really talk about whatever you want, since especially since it's not a quasi-judicial matter.
Okay, good. Okay, we'll vote on the table motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Okay.
I'd like to vote on it right now.
The motion to table passes 2-1. Okay, let's see. That ends the formal list of votes and considerations at today's meeting. It's 4:52. We will have some other commentary before then. If anyone wishes to make public comment today on matters that are not on this agenda, we will hear that now or at 5 p.m. at your convenience. Yes, sir.
My name is Michael Parriman. I live at 1010 Green Tree Drive. At the last commission meeting, there was a topic on branding that was held over to this meeting.
Correct.
That does not come on this meeting. I understand from Randy that this has been pushed back to the committee, but I'm not quite sure on what terms it's been pushed back to the committee. My comments are similar to those that I shared with the commission and email, but I'll repeat them for the community. That is, I see no reason why we need to brand these buildings. We are Winter Park. That is a brand. I don't think we need to go beyond that brand. I don't know who we're trying to sell this brand to. We have a Winter Park Library, we have another one. We have a venue. I think it's great. We don't need to change that. I'd also like to just bring up something Commissioner Seidel made a comment last time. Can we show an overhead? So, whoops, a bit big.
There's a way to shrink that. I'm not sure how exactly.
Commissioner Seidel made the point that this is MLK Park. That's an important community asset. Look what we have here. MLK Park at the canopy. This is a step way beyond what I think we should be considering. My comment, my suggestion, is we do not need to brand these buildings. The brand is Winter Park. It's a great brand. We are all proud of it. I suggest we stay with that brand. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm laughing because he took my thunder. No, you're okay, and that's good. Mary Dang is 650 Kenton Avenue. As you know, I wrote you guys a letter, and I firmly agree and I firmly disagree with the branding. What's the purpose of a brand? Martin Luther Park runs from Denning's to Moore's to Hopper to Comstock. The venues are there. They're in Martin Luther King's Park. If the library, since the library is moved there, the Civic Center was there. We didn't say the Civic Center at Lake Island or Martin Luther King Park. It has an address. You go to the library or the new event center. And I was just appalled when I saw that. It diminishes MLK Park. The park is the focal point. It is the property was taken through eminent domain years ago for a park, not for a canopy. So I firmly disagree with it, and I hope that you guys will not approve such a thing. If you want to call something a canopy, call the library and the event center the canopy. But it's not MLK at the canopy. So please do not support that. And I don't think any other residents support that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Martha Bryan Hall, 331 West Lyman Avenue. I have two items I would like to speak, one with the park and the signing, and with the Ramadaj 1792 flooding yesterday. I have pictures to show. So will I have two? Could I do two? Only one. Great. Thank you. I concur with Mrs. Daniels and the young man that spoke before. With this signage with the Martin Luther King's Park, I think that everything should come under the Martin Luther King's Park. Commissioner Springer and Randy Knight and Mrs. Daniels and Carol Fennell, they were all on that task force. They worked very hard. I think comments has been spoken. The community really does not wish for that park to have anything to shadow MLK Junior's Park. So thank you. Now what I have now is from yesterday, the flooding of 1792 going north 1792 and south 1792. You could not get out simply because of the flooding. And as Commissioner Carol Cooper made the statement that Ramadaj has a lot to do with what is happening within that area. On the 14th of April, I stopped to Larry Floyd's house to do some work for me, and his address is 1211 Lewis Drive. He has come before staff in regards to the road where the city had a big manhole standing in front of his home. I went there to pick him up. To disregard that because this is second. I finished with. Okay. All right. I'm going to look confused here. Okay, great. When I went to pick him up, I saw the manhole that was standing high in the on Lewis Drive. So Mr. Floyd told me to cut through the field where all the equipment was stored once upon a time. So I went there, and when I brought him back, he said, go back through the field. Well, it was dark, and what I did, I had to back up, and I hit the manhole. I called, and his daughter said, oh, that's Mrs. Hall. I called the city last Monday on the 14th, I do believe, and also I called the police department to make a report. So when I went back there Tuesday evening, they had put dirt to raise the manhole that it would not be exposed at high. But this same developer made the comment when he put the fence around that area that let's fence them in like they are cattle. Since he has fenced the neighbors in as cattle, I have pictures here. I can pass them around and I can talk from yesterday's rain. 1792 by the bridge underpath. One of the cars went into the, the alley, not alley, the street. The other one, lady was in a Mercedes Benz. Her car was covered, not quite covered, but the window was almost to the doors.
It's the same thing that happened before.
Yes, it happened before, 2 weeks ago, in fact.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago. So now, if the city would love to have these lawsuits and you're part of with Maitland, because Maitland is part of it, with the Twin Lakes. And that is where all the water is running into Twin Lakes. But what you all have done, you have blocked the manholes so that the water can run into this man's house. Send me the pictures here, you can see where the car, where it run into his home, flood him out, and then the developers say, put them like they are cattle. Now my saying is, where is the justice? Where do you, how do you treat certain residents just because the person refused to sell their property to you? Now, I think that Winter Park needs to think a little more, be concerned about all of the residents, not some, because as Mrs. Cooper said, the money that you all have put in Ramadas for the infrastructure, you could have done a lot more for the residents on the west side. I think this, I'd like for you all to look at these pictures, because it is a shame. It's a disgrace that when we elect you all as to be the caretakers of the city, and you do not represent all people. Now, Mr. Floyd would like to be on the agenda, so I can look, find out when can he be on the agenda that I can come back with him, because staff knows all about this. Doorstone, Jeff Briggs, they all are aware. Okay. And they said there's nothing they can do about it.
Thank
so
you,
maybe something you all can do.
Thank you. I'd like more information on this from staff, if you could provide us with a report.
Yes, thank you. All of us.
I said us.
I asked today because I was out of town this weekend, and Randy told me that the flooding was in Maitland.
That's what I was told, too, that it wasn't our...
So we do need that clarified.
Well, the cause of the flooding was in Maitland, but part of it may have encroached upon our border.
We may not have gotten complete information, and you could help
so we're
us understand
get it
a little bit better.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Sally Flynn, 1400 Highland Road. Wasn't going to talk about that flooding, but I've been with people who say, have you seen the flooding out on 1792? And so I guess it's getting pretty bad out there. But I did want to agree with Mr. Perlman and Mary Daniels that why, two things. Don't do any rebranding. Winter Park is our brand. The other thing is Martin Luther King Park must remain the prominent sounding name for that park. We are already taking a lot away from it by building this on it, on that on it, but it needs to remain just out in the open, Martin Luther King Park. Don't get rid of it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll continue to take public comment on matters not before the commission's agenda today. And that issue, by the way, for the benefit of the public, will hopefully be addressed by the commission at the next meeting on May 14th. Yes, sir.
Forrest Michael, 358 West Comstock Avenue. Glad to be here. Glad you're here, all three of you. And for County Greg, the canopy, as a landscape architect, I really take offense to the canopy issue. And I'm not trying to be negative here. I'm trying to be positive. I realized at the last meeting, I was listening, and I heard something about a geotech report hadn't quite been resolved yet, and yet we're like 6 months into the project, the library project, or somewhere in that range. I'm just kind of speculating here. But I asked myself, as a former Department of Defense project manager, and I'm asking myself, why don't we have a geotech report 6 months into the project? And how is that going to impact our costs? I hear Ms. Commissioner Cooper talking about costs, and it's a serious, serious issue. And I'd like to know when we're going to hear an answer to how many dollars is it going to cost the geotech impact on this site. And then number two, as a former project manager, I used to think a lot about, well, how do you save money on this project? And as a designer, I think, how do you save money on this project, this library project? Because with the geotech ads, we're going to go even more over budget. So I'm just thinking here, the canopy brought it to mind. We are literally, because of the architect's design, we are literally wiping out the canopy that has taken 30 25 to 30 years to grow, and it's going to cost, number one, money to remove that canopy, to grub and take it away, and number two, it's going to take another 25, 30 years to grow a, quote, canopy back. And where do we get off trying to brand something canopy whenever we do have, like Mary Daniel says, we do have a park name that's just great. And we went through that process. So canopy doesn't make any sense. Tearing out all those trees doesn't make any sense just to build a big, hot terrace out there per the architect's design. It's just ridiculous. And those are my off-the-cuff comments on cost overruns, serious cost overruns, and the lack of a canopy at Martin Luther King Park's northwest corner. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Till Bendick, and I would like to speak in support of Mary Daniels and the others who are not in favor of the rebranding of the park.
Where do you live, ma'am? Excuse me, for the record.
Jill Bendick?
Yes.
Your address.
1211 Oxford Road.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's just part of the procedure. Right.
Okay. I feel that it's being extremely insensitive to the community who have all spoken against the renaming, because the name Martin Luther King Park is very, very important and sensitive to the West Side community. I also would like to draw your attention to the fact that there is a business right near the park that's called the Canopy. Why are we calling our park the Canopy when that name is already in use in that neighborhood? So I think it's a bad idea from multiple perspectives, and I would hope that you would step back from that and let us enjoy the Martin Luther King Park that we all have grown to love. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, that issue should be formally considered at the next meeting. Any other members of the public wishing to comment on matters not on today's agenda?
Not on today. It's not. John Schofield, 358 Victoria Avenue, Winter Park, Florida. I didn't know this was up, but I would support keeping Martin Luther King Jr. Park separate. I've enjoyed the park for many years. What I wanted to comment on was the parking dilemma, which I don't have an issue with that because I'm fortunate to have 14 spaces right here. But in the new advent of brilliant people in California coming up with ways of using underutilized assets, I have 14 spaces there, of which 10 of them do not get used after 5 o'clock and do not get used on Saturdays and Sundays. And it seems like a silly waste of land, because you have people desperately wanting to go to restaurants on a Saturday evening, running around in circles looking for a place to park, and I've got this empty space. I don't know how that would ever resolve. I don't know how liability would work. But, you know, if there's a sign on Park Avenue that says, you know, evening or weekend parking for patrons of the restaurants is available, there may be other businesses in the downtown area that have underutilized assets.
Right.
Okay.
And that's a really good idea.
I have no idea how it would work out, but it just seems sad to see church empty space. You
know? So you're volunteering your parking lot, John?
I don't know what the answer is, because my insurance company would probably say, nah, you're not going to do that. But there's got to be a way. Right?
Well, I think that's a great idea.
There's got to be a
way.
It is a good idea. And I don't mind doing it. If I'm not subject to liability issues, I don't mind. I'd like to help people. I'd like to help the restaurants have easy parking.
Well, it's a good idea. In fact, you know, just to comment on that, I remember parking at the original O'Rena, and you know, I think a third of the parking was private property around the boundary of the actual parking lot, where children and their parents would be standing there with cardboard signs going, park for $10. So somehow they got away with it.
Well, at the Sidewalk Arts Festival in 1968, I started selling spaces for 25 cents a spot, but I get about 20 bucks now.
So you do rent them.
I do.
Fair enough. Thank you. All right. Sure.
Elmo.
Elmo.
Oh, wait, you got to be able to see it. Can you make it smaller?
There's a knob or something here.
Oh, thank you. Hi, I'm Beth Hutton Lewis. I reside at 1241 Oaks Boulevard. I've been a resident since 1993, and the house next door to me got torn down. And I don't know if this is a fence or a structure, but I can no longer pull into my carport and open my car door.
Oh.
Please stop by and see it. It's quite the talk of the neighborhood. There was three surveys that I know of, that I understand, my survey, her survey when they bought the house, and supposedly another survey that got this permit. And I believe it gave her a little bit more space than she was supposed to get. I know we don't have 5-foot setbacks in Winter Park, so there's no way for them to finish this thing. That my carport poles are, you can't even put your hand barely back there. So it's going to be an unfinished wall because...
Well, that obviously doesn't look right. Have you reviewed this with our code people?
Yes, sir.
And you were nodding your head, Mr. City Manager. What's the city's position on this?
I don't know. Is George Wiggins here? There he is.
Yes, this is a redeveloping property next door, and this is a property line dispute issue in which Ms. Lewis lives at the property next door with the car and lived there for many years. She does have a nonconforming carport that encroaches onto the neighboring property according to the surveys that we have seen. And we have been working with the builder next door and with the property owner next door and with Ms. Lewis on a number of occasions. There's been untold number of conversations going back and forth and communications. And we've interceded over and over and over again trying to get the wall as further away from her nonconforming carport as possible. The owner has decided to place the wall right inside her property according to the survey.
Inside her property?
Yes. Yes.
Who's her?
I'm sure.
The adjacent property owner that's building a new house.
Is it on the property line or is it?
It's within, the carport is actually encroaching onto the property next door.
Is the brown stake, George, is that the property line?
Yes.
And so where is the setback?
There's no setback required for a wall along your side property line. Just like any fence or any other structure, you can build it, you know, right up to your property line, as long as you stay on your property. Matter of fact, they've had to set it in. And actually, this is setting the wall inside the adjacent property. Again, we have interceded over and over again with the contractor and through the and the owner to, you know, try to keep it as far away as reasonably possible while still respecting their property rights.
So this is a survey boundary dispute, is that fair?
Yes, this is a location, and Ms. Lewis is trying to voluntarily get as much room, obviously, as she can to maintain for getting in and out of her vehicle. And again, we've interceded untold number of times, conversations over the weekend, in the past week, visits to the property, and if Ms. Lewis can verify this, I think, that, you know, trying to get her as much room reasonably to, even though her carport is nonconforming, and I don't know when it was built, over 30 years ago, I assume, before she bought the house, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. So that's the situation.
Oh, yeah, please.
I also, in February, offered to buy a couple feet of the property, because you can see my monuments where they go up the driveway and in the backyard.
Yep.
There was 2 feet that, that a fence was put around, and there used to be a 40-year-old camphor tree. She cut down a 25-year-old palm tree.
Yeah.
And so I offered, let me buy this property. It wouldn't get a mess with the building of their McMansion, and I got a no.
Okay. Mr. Arneman?
Thank you for listening.
Yes, happy to listen. What can the City Commission do, if anything, to intercede on a survey boundary dispute, one way or the other?
It is a private matter, private dispute, as long as the city code requirements have been met by both property owners. We really have no ability to get involved. The question, this is the first I've seen or heard of this. The thing that pops out to me, though, is it actually a non-conforming carport, or was it, I mean, if it was not properly constructed at the time, it may be an illegal carport. I mean, that's not comfort to Ms. Lewis here, but at the same time, if the wall has been constructed in accordance with the city code requirements, I mean, it really is, it appears to be a private dispute between two lot owners. I've been involved, not for the city or other cities, but on behalf of property owners. Unfortunately, the neighbors don't or cannot work it out. They have the civil court system to
resolve.
To go to.
Yeah.
Can I ask one more thing?
Certainly.
Is it a fence or is it a structure?
It's a wall, correct, George?
Is it a part of a house?
No, it's not part of the house. It's a freestanding wall, a 6-foot wall. What you see there is a return of the wall back into the property, and it extends all the way back to the rear of the corner property, which is next door, and then it takes a 90-degree turn, and the wall has built respecting the required setbacks for the front and for the other parts of the wall. But the dispute is over.
How thick is this wall?
It's one masonry wall.
It's one center block.
It's only one masonry unit thick, 8 inches. It's only 8 inches
and
wide.
Is it the height, and does it stop at the area it's supposed to stop, coming up the side?
It's 6 feet
it's
tall.
It's totally within code.
Correct.
If my carport was illegal and it was taken down, I still wouldn't be able to use my driveway. I wouldn't be able to open my car door. I'm asking to be able to open my car door. I do have a teenage boy that's driving, so he'll be able to open his car door. And I don't know how they're going to finish this side of the wall, fence, whatever you want to call it, because they can't get over there.
Well, I think we'd all like to give you some kind of positive response. I hope you understand that we as a commission, your city commission, can't get involved in private disputes about property lines.
So if it's on my property at all, what would the outcome be? If that wall is at all on my property line, would you all be involved?
No, that's a private property dispute.
It's all private.
Unless it was improperly permitted.
But we
wouldn't
because
permit.
They got a survey. What I understood is that they got a survey, a third survey. Was it the same survey that when they bought the house, which gave them more space?
I think it would be reasonable to refer you to a personal attorney to discuss the property dispute because the city commission.
So here's my other question. Yeah. She's brought us information that says there was three surveys. Okay.
Right.
Yes.
And so how do you know, Mr. George?
Which permit is correct?
Permit did you use to? Which survey did you use? Because if in fact, and there's no reason for this to happen unless that did in fact happen.
And it was just put up on Saturday.
Let me say this: that we will look at any and all surveys. I've only seen one, the one that was required for the permit, and the one basis for the construction of the wall. And if there's other surveys, you know, please bring them forward. I'd like to see them. We want to help, you know, reasonably to the greatest extent we can. But they did provide.
Yes, ma'am. They showed up at 6:57. Actually, they were there before 6:57 because my boys were sleeping and I watched them. And then they started. It was 8 to 10 Hispanic gentlemen. And I said, I'm not mad at you guys, but you got to be quiet because they were yapping. And I said, my kids are sleeping. Stop. And I was very nice to them, but I'm a mom.
But that's where the entrance to your house is on the side. And this
yes,
is where
ma'am, that's
your driveway
how we go
is.
All,
this is the only driveway and the only entrance.
Yes, that's where we unload groceries. That's where we pull in 8 to 10 times a day. That's where we both get in and out of the car. Yes, ma'am. Yes. I have two boys, 14 and 16.
But you do have a front door on the front of the house. There is a main entrance at the front of the house. This is a side door. Was it goes into your kitchen or?
I think we should be a little more careful here because there are two sides to these stories, and that's what we can't address.
Right. And I understand that the neighbors that were walking by are a little upset because they have houses my size, and they feel this is coming to their future. So, I, you know, if you can't correct this, which I'm going to take your advice on council, but, you know.
Well, I do appreciate you bringing it to us, you know, to our attention, because if nothing else, I think it does identify a potential need to look at whether or not we need to change some of the codes in certain circumstances to prevent this kind of conflict from occurring again. But your specific circumstance, I hope you understand, as much as I think we'd like to help, there are...
Please do.
It's a civil matter between two property owners.
Well, just for the record, I have 15 windows in my house, and on the other side of me, I was up here 10 years ago when you built the park, and you put a concrete wall on that side. So I have my bedroom windows face a concrete wall, and now my new seven windows, my living room, my kitchen, my family room, all face concrete walls now, and all my trees, all my shade is gone. So now I can't even park in my carport in 110 degrees. I know that's, but we live in Florida, and that's probably why the gentleman that lived in the house before built that carport for his wife. It's just living, I'm not asking for anything but space, the space that I deserve in the Constitution. So I'm an attorney, I guess.
Sorry.
That's what you're saying?
Well, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I can't tell you what to do. We can't tell you what to do. It's a.
I know. I'm new to this. This isn't. Yeah. I don't do this daily, so.
Well, it is a structural
issue.
We're
new to this problem, too.
Please try by 1241 Oaks Boulevard. I'm right off North Park Avenue.
Okay.
My door is always open. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Well, it used to be open.
Yeah, it used to be.
I'm going to tell you guys that is wrong.
It's not appropriate, certainly.
I'm happy to look at the codes, and I'm sorry that we can't get directly involved.
Concrete wall that high, that close,
that far up on the side, right? And our code stopped it at some point. The question is, what point does it stop?
Oh, I'm sure he does, and there he is.
Ask him his opinion.
Mr. Vice Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
I think I have a problem with my mic, and I was trying to speak there, but
yeah, I didn't hear you before.
Ms. Lewis, please. On multiple occasions, in my opinion, what I've seen happen here and where the city could help was that if there was a variance given to the property being developed. And this may be too late because they may already be doing what they're doing, but essentially that allowed them to have a setback that didn't meet code and sell her the property, and maybe we provide the house can build a little more square footage so they can get their money out of it. That's the area where we could actually help a deal get worked out between the two private parties by providing some relief on our codes to the developer. And I don't know if that action was ever pursued, as opposed to the situation we're in now, which is obviously you've got a neighbor that's changing by redeveloping, they're definitely impacting the other neighbor who would have no idea this was going to happen when she bought the house, right? So it's a tough situation, but I see that's the only area from the city that we can actually legally do something, if you will, is just be a third party that can help them negotiate something by us allowing the developer to do something we normally wouldn't allow.
I think
and the hardship would then be on Ms. Lewis. It's not on the developer, so it's like a hardship for her property, but the developer gets the benefit, if you follow me.
Where would the developer get the benefit?
Well, just for example, if they sold Ms. Lewis the 2-foot or 3-foot of property,
right.
But they were able to do their setback based on the original property line.
I get it. Okay, thanks, Greg. That's a reason.
They can use that property as part of the calculation of their allowable.
I get it.
I offered February 8th to buy the 2 feet of property and was told no.
I appreciate that, but what
through an attorney.
what Commissioner Seidel is suggesting, and I think it's a constructive suggestion, is that while it's between you and your neighbor, you know, I think this commission would probably be amenable to allowing your neighbor with whom you have this conflict to provide that neighbor with some setback variances to incentivize him to sell you the extra 2 feet you need to open your door. Do you follow?
Yes, sir.
Is that a fair way to put it, Greg?
Yes,
yes, but ultimately it still comes down to you and your neighbor finding a solution, and in that case the city commission may be able to help.
Thank you. We actually hired an attorney, and her attorney said no, she wouldn't sell it. The doctor that's
Well, she may sell it if she gets enough setback relief.
She won't talk to me. It's all through the attorney, and the attorney just said they're not going to finish the wall.
Well,
could I say, we did suggest, I guess it's been over 2 weeks ago or more, when we saw this coming. I mean, this has been coming for weeks, and I suggested to Ms. Lewis that she get with the owner next door, see if the owner would agree to an easement while the owner next door would still retain full ownership of her property. She wouldn't lose foyer ratio, but if she would agree to an easement and move the wall over 2 feet, mm-hmm. and would allow Ms. Lewis have that extra area, you know, while still, which would have been the best solution of all, is to agree to an easement to move the wall, at least in that area of her house, so that it didn't block her carport.
But ultimately, the city commission, the city of Winter Park, can't force your neighbor to negotiate with you. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. She's a doctor, and I've called her office, and she won't return my phone call. So I've been going through Carmen Dominguez and an attorney, and I've gotten no. And I texted George's response. I said, I just met with George. He has a solution. Supposedly, I was going to get 8 more inches. I mean, you need to come by and see it, for just so maybe it won't happen in the future to the next person. It, like you all said, it's not right. It's not right. Thank you.
Thank you for
coming. Listening.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments today on matters not before the City Commission?
I will keep my remarks short. You guys have stayed here long enough. Two sessions in a row, Vice Mayor's in charge. I want to come back to the commission and thank you all so much for including our remarks.
Could you just state your name and address?
Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead. Trish Gallagher. I'm at 881 Via Lugano. I'm also currently serving as president of the Winter Park Library Association, known as the Library Board. So, again, thank you to the commission for including our remarks, to the construction team. And I want to let you all know that we had an extremely productive and collaborative discussion with all the team members, Pizzuti, Hunt and Brady, and the Aja and Associates team, and went line by line through all of our particular issues. And I feel like everything has the attention it needs, and we will be working towards resolutions in all those areas. And it's probably going to involve compromise on both sides, so we'll figure that out. One of the things I wanted to ask the commission, at the last commission meeting, you pulled back one of the ad alternate features that would be in the library, which is the raked auditorium, so the stepped auditorium. And the library board and staff feel very strongly about this being a really unique and special feature in the new library, so much so that we would like to request that you delay removing this officially from the design until you give us an opportunity to seek private funding for this amenity. We have a letter in support of this feature of the library from Ajay and Associates, and I know we have other community institutions that would speak out in support of it as well, if you'd like to give us a little bit of time to gather that feedback.
Sure, and my recollection of what we discussed was that that item was going to remain for the time being and be part of the alternate cost work as they went forward, and that the final decision on that would be made down the road.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
That's not what we agreed to, but I could be persuaded to agree to that in life.
I thought we took that one out.
I know, it was an out.
The only thing that we did, we took that out, we took out all those. So I mean, to keep their point made, maybe we could do that. But last time we voted to
We voted to take it out. But I am very happy to reconsider my vote on that.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooper. I know we do have James Russell from Pizzuti, and we conferred earlier this afternoon, and he indicated that the cost to carry this particular design feature forward is not an expensive item to continue at this time. And we would definitely agree to a finite amount of time so that the commission isn't strung along on this aspect if we can't fund it.
Yeah, the question is, what does it cost, and what is the drop-dead time? And I think only our rep can answer that.
Before you go, I'm sorry, I misunderstood the results of the last meeting, and then that's my fault.
But you were right.
I know. I can't do everything right all the time. It's my understanding that was something that the library board, well, let me put it this way. My vote is totally open to the preference of the library board, because you're the ones who are going to occupy the building. All right.
Greg is the only one that
needs to be paid for, as Commissioner Sprinkle will tell you.
Right, I understand that, and I agree with that as well. Mr. Seidel, do you have any comments on this before General?
Well, he voted on it the first time.
Yeah, no, I thought we should be evaluating all the options.
Yeah, I'm happy to leave it open for further analysis before we
vote. Well, we have to vote on it.
All the options. We're getting ourselves in a whole other place here, folks.
We can put this all on the next agenda if you'd like.
Yeah, you need to bring it up that way, because we voted all of that down. The only one we kept open
was the rooftop.
And that's what we said to come back with. Okay. We came back with the rooftop.
And you left you put the portico share in.
We approved the portico share.
And then you wanted to carry the design of the
rooftop.
And I'd like to, we have a donor that doesn't want to be identified at this time to pay for the, to sponsor, whatever the right word is, the outdoor amphitheater.
Right.
So that one, we have someone willing to put up the money for that part of the project. So
then we have to include that. So we do need to review this next time.
So we should just put the whole thing back in, guys.
Right.
Because
Absolutely.
That includes everything
Right.
You want to add everything back in and reconsider it all?
We have to, because this is all.
This is
we
all
new information.
We have
somebody to fund everything, except the library wants to raise it.
So what we have to do, I think what we need to do then, is to the consideration of the alternatives on the rooftop venue should come back to us at the next meeting, when there will be five of us here, along with the cost estimates with and without the raked auditorium, and the statement of preference from the library board and the architect on those issues. Is that fair?
And the cost to carry it forward, and the real drop-dead date for the decision to
Just to clarify, so if you remember, advancing the two items that were being advanced as add alternates were the outdoor amphitheater, and the portico share was added based on finding additional funding. The raked auditorium can be advanced as an add alternate, and that will allow you to do two things. If there are bid savings, then you could apply those if it is advanced in design, or if additional fundraising happens, then you could advance it. The only additional design costs, I will say we don't know exactly what those are, the items that it affects, which is really what drives it, is a lower level stop in the elevator, and ingress and egress out of that lower level, and moving some additional storage space. So if the raked auditorium is not there, we have to redesign a little to get that storage space picked up. So they're minimal items, but you can continue to advance it further as long as you have some of those design items. But it shouldn't be a lot of money that could be covered out of contingencies, but it's more the fact that as an ad alternate, you can fund it either through bid savings or additional fundraising. So as much as you did with the outdoor amphitheater, to continue the design and move it forward, so you can look at some of that. We can present additional estimates next week, but they really won't change. They are outside of your budget, so you either have to wait till you have additional funding or bids come in good. So
that's So, okay, so we have three nods to have this back in?
Absolutely.
For consideration at the next meeting. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming forward with that.
Before you sit down, would you tell everybody about the valedictorian luncheon tomorrow?
Just oh, I'd be honored.
I would rather you do it than me, and I just, it's a highlight of my year, but you tell me.
Oh, thank you so much, Commissioner Spickle. Yes, we have a very fabulous tradition at the library, thanks to Ken Murrah, who felt that valedictorians didn't get the attention that they deserved after seeing all the sports stars get written up in the paper. So he set aside funding every year for the library to host a valedictorian luncheon. So we have a fabulous luncheon annually that honors all of the straight-A students. And this year they're 23 from Winter Park High School who will be feted at lunch at Mead Gardens because now we've outgrown our community room for this event. And each valedictorian is introduced by either a trustee or library staff member and presented with a book. And so it's really a very meaningful event, and thanks to Ken Murrah for starting it, and now he has endowed the event so that it will go forward in the future. So thank you, Commissioner.
Michael, you wish to speak again? We'll indulge that for you.
Given the topic of the budget for the library, et cetera, has come up, I'd like to make a comment.
Just please identify yourself for the record again.
Michael Perelman, 1010 Greatview Drive.
Thank you.
Commissioner Cooper last time emphasized transparency on the budget. I don't think we have transparency on the budget. We keep on hearing different numbers, a small cost to do this, a small cost to do that. We're already over budget. These things do not get cheaper in my experience. They get more expensive. I am extremely concerned that we keep on allocating monies that we don't quite know how much they are, and we keep on doing things. Now, if there's somebody who wants to offer private money, that is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I think the rooftop venue should be privately funded. It should not be city funded. So I would really emphasize to the commission that Commissioner Cooper's thoughts about budget transparency is critical. We need to understand what we're spending, what we think we're going to spend, and what all these little incremental creeps are going to be. So I really would encourage you to look at the budget very carefully as you consider all of these, maybe what these, who knows. I think it's really important. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Seeing no one else standing for public comment, we will close the public comment, and we're finished with the agenda. We'll go to commission reports. Mr. Seidel.
Okay, so apparently I couldn't talk when the Elmo was on, but can you hear me now okay?
Yes.
Okay, I wondered why no one was listening to me during the Ms. Lewis discussion. So,
sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
We always listen to you, Greg.
I'm sorry?
We always listen to you. Sorry.
Okay. Well, what I just wanted to talk about in my time here was actually listening to you, Commissioner Cooper, and your comment about the murals in the downtown district. That, you know, one of the things in my original campaign was the big battle about the character of the city between the two mayor candidates. And I think Commissioner Cooper's point about not having murals in the downtown or Hannibal Square area is kind of goes to that character of the city point that, you know, we don't have them now. Historically, we haven't had them. And that, you know, not letting them be put in those areas to me sounds like a reasonable addition to the sign code. And that the, you know, if we wanted to do it, that it could only be approved by the commission. And, you know, let's just say, for example, the one theater at the community center was celebrating that area. I would consider that a mural on a wall, but it should be down there. So I think I think we would put that exception in there. So I just wanted to share that for consideration for the next meeting. But I did think Commissioner Cooper had a good point. So that's all I got.
Thank you, Greg. Commissioner Sprinkle, any comments on anything?
I wanted to mention the valedictorians, and then did I not hear that the Winter Park High School also won the All Sports Award again this year?
I hadn't heard that.
So I think that we need to continue to celebrate what our teams bring to us and what our own educational. Sorry, I'm always going to bring up the education.
Yeah, you don't have to apologize.
Really, something to be very proud of, and I think it's something that people want to look at.
All
Absolutely. I have a couple of things that I would like to see if you're interested in looking at in the future. One of them I've already started to talk to Dory about, and that's some kind of a joint planning agreement with Orange County. And I think this recent racetrack kind of elevated that discussion a little bit. And I don't know that that's a great idea, but I would like to hear from staff, you know, your not today, but your experience, and maybe give us some samples and help, you know, help us talk about that a little bit, about whether it makes sense for Winter Park or not, if that's something that anybody else is interested in.
Well, I would hope that staff is working with Orange County in those areas. I mean, I know they're aware of what's going on at the church on
Calvary.
Calvary Church. Yep. And I know they're aware of other issues that border our city, and I would expect them to be on top of those.
And it's
those.
Just a question of how formal we want that agreement to be, and there is a process for joint planning agreements, and it's not one that we've executed.
You're thinking of an agreement whereby the county agrees to work with, to contact the city of Winter Park whenever they're evaluating potential changes in properties that abut our boundaries, or what?
I think some of that we have.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, what is the process? What is the joint planning agreement? Is that something that we should pursue? And for me, it's more of an education and just evaluating what we've got, because it was mentioned to me by a couple of the people from Orange County. You know,
sure.
Gee, maybe we really need to have this in place. So I think it's worth understanding and talking about as a commission.
I have no problem with that at all. In fact, one of our great challenges, as we all know, is managing what goes on at our boundaries.
That's right.
Having something like the racetrack come down the pike and be notified just through, you know, word of mouth initially, and then turn into a more formal thing is probably not the most structured way to approach things like that. We know that that the city of Edgewater has approved a general concept for 1 million square feet of redevelopment in the Underford property.
Eatonville.
What did I say?
Edgewater.
Oh, no. Please forgive me, all people from Edgewater. And so those kind of things are of interest to us, obviously, and I think they're of interest to staff on a routine basis. I don't know if there's a way to formalize those interactions. You know, Kurt's...
Yeah, there's a statutory mechanism for in-local agreements, the comprehensive planning mechanism. I'm sure Dory and Jeff...
I certainly endorse a formal way for us to be aware of what's happening around us. I don't know what that's involved or what we direct the staff to do, but I'm in favor of it as a concept.
Just educate us. You know, give us some samples, educate us. I think that's...
We're all looking at Troy, but I don't think...
No, it's Dory on this one.
Where's
Dory? It's the plan late. And then the second item I noticed is that in the changes to the R3 that we tabled till next week, one of the items under the workforce affordable housing talks about payment in lieu of taxes, and that's one of the things that we're taking out, is that opportunity to execute payment in lieu of tax agreements. And it probably makes sense to take it out at that point. The question is this something that we might want a task force to take a look at for us, period, in the city of Winter Park, is payment in lieu of taxes, which is something that is in effect in a lot of communities with their nonprofit organizations. And the question is, should we evaluate that?
Evaluate that how?
See what our options are, see what other communities do, because I don't know what makes sense and what doesn't, but I do know that a lot of communities, and when we took it out of our land use code, it kind of increased my awareness. It was like, oh, we haven't had that conversation since 2006. Maybe we should talk about that a little bit. And that's not a popular thing. So certainly for me to be the person talking about it when I'm going to run for office is very bold, but I'm willing to talk about it, and I'm wondering if we shouldn't evaluate it. So that's where I'm at.
Just to be specific, you're...
Was that announcing something we're all supposed to know now?
Yes, I'm running for office next year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. At home, here.
So, I'm not sure I want to get into this now.
Okay. Okay, no, that's fair.
I'm not against talking about it in a broader context, maybe with all five of us, because it is it's an issue that's come up, I think, in New Haven, Connecticut, for example, Yale University pays them but at the same time, we have churches and other nonprofits, and how do you be fair to everybody?
Balancing it, absolutely. Why I said a task force. I didn't say I had a decision in mind, but I would like to understand.
Well, a task force is a...
I don't want a task force.
Yeah, I don't want a task force either. There's going to be no task force on that.
No task force on
this. Okay, good enough.
I think we have to say we want some action to do a task force, and I'm not ready to go there today.
All right. Yeah, I'm not either.
All right.
Anything else?
No, that's fine. The other thing I had was the idea of waiting until the design team brings us back this next step. I know that we try to keep workshops at a minimum, but quite frankly, I'm hearing from a lot of residents that have different interests in the library, some wanting to ensure that the functionality is appropriate, some being more concerned about what did that comment about soil borings mean? And so the question to me is there an opportunity for a workshop where we can have an update before we get to the place where you bring us back that next formal step? And I don't know at what point that makes sense, but I would certainly like to understand how you have evaluated and moved forward with the library's needs. And oh, by the way, how much will that cost? Is that something that we all want to move forward with? And I just hate to wait all the way until this next major milestone, because that's what happened this time. I mean, we waited till a major milestone, and then we had an uncomfortable situation where we didn't have all the information. So for me, I would very much like to find some workshop along that decision-making process as opposed to waiting until that comes forward.
Well, I'll share my thoughts on it. There are the people doing the nitty-gritty work, and Mr. Russell can comment on this better than I can. If I mess something up, Jen, let me know. They don't have a definitive answer to everything.
Absolutely.
Now, and they won't until the final bids come in, and then some of those bids will get changed because of factors that are not under our control. So, you know, the sense of not being aware of what's going on, I understand, but the reality is that the process that they have to follow to design, cost engineer, get some kind of a sense of costs from reliable sources that's not a formal bid, go back and re-engineer and so forth and so on. Along the way, to a large extent, they're working the system based upon their experience and the absence
fluid.
Of facts.
I get the fluid part.
Yeah, I feel that that their best judgment is what we're paying for as a city. And I trust their judgment, and until there is something specific for us to act on, I don't know what benefit there is to essentially question their judgment. That's the way I look at what you're suggesting.
Okay. And the way I look at it is, as the commission, we are responsible as we move forward.
Right.
And being responsible, you kind of need a little more information and a little more exchange between the five heads of the body. And I know each one of us brings a different perspective, and that's not a bad thing. You know, it's not a bad thing. But I just feel like we've got a lot of things out there that ultimately result in cost, significant cost. And as we're making those decisions, I'd like all of us to be on board with it. But I can defer and just meet privately. I'm happy to do that. But from my perspective, I don't want to wait until the design is brought to me to start having those conversations. That's all.
I'm not sure there's any benefit from doing that.
We asked about what that geotech comment means to us, because I was taken a little off guard too, that was made at the end of the presentation about where our cost was, and then they said, oh, by the way, we've got a geotech issue.
Right.
You follow me?
No, I understand completely. Well,
right, and that's the kind of information I'm talking about us discussing.
But if they felt that they couldn't work whatever geotech issue there may or may not be, then they have an obligation to come to us as a matter of our relationship and their status as our professional consultants and work through alternatives. And so far we haven't heard from them, and I don't think that's, you know, I knew that issue existed because I asked Randy about it because of the history of soil borings and the concerns some citizens have expressed about all that over the months. And
Mr. Vice Mayor, they had done some initial borings that didn't show any issue, and those borings were shared with us, and they were done by Ardaman.
Right.
So they've now, so in my mind, I was at ease with the geotech situation, and so now that I've heard that there's another issue, I would like to know a little bit more about that issue myself, and is it going to have any impact? And what I was assuming is they were still evaluating the results.
Me too.
Let us know.
And I was waiting for him to come to us.
Well, he's here. Let's hear what he says.
Yeah. Please do. Is there an update on that at this point?
Well, I'll give you the update that I have. So a couple things. I'm going to step back for everybody to understand how projects like this occur. So when you're doing your original due diligence on a site, you are picking sites to do borings, to do all of your preliminary analysis. A soil boring is about this big. So if you imagine, you're going to do as many as those as you can afford. That's still only as good as this. You could miss something on either side of that by a foot. So in the early stages, when you're trying to get an idea, general idea of where the building may be laid out, you'll do a full set or initial set of borings. Once the concept design is advanced, now you know where the buildings are going to situate. Then you go and you do additional borings, because now you have a better idea of where the physical buildings will be. So those additional borings came back with some soils that were looser than we would like because of being near the pond. So part of the solutions that we're advancing is maybe just shifting the building as far away from that, staying within your budget to find solutions that still work that are not materially big changes to any of your cost or the soil. So we're still evaluating that. That's part of what Hunt and Brady is doing with Ajay, is to look at ways to avoid as much of that as you can, because until you dig, even those additional borings are only as good as this. And so part of our job for you is your budget carries contingencies for all the things that we don't know that's happening under the soil. So it's all relative and in your budget. It's just a matter of that is part of the process. As you learn more, you can identify those spots. So we're still trying to evaluate ways to keep everything within the budget and look at changes that accommodate some of those unknowns, that they will still be there through construction.
And I need to say that my job up here is to make sure everything that we do is within budget. So it's not simply Carolyn Cooper who cares about that. All of us care about that, without a doubt. We are very budget-minded, which is why we have the budget we have in the city. And we know that we're at this place because what we want is caviar, and what we're getting is caviar. But we didn't have caviar cost. I mean, that's what it came down to. So we have to look at that. We have to make the hard decisions. And we all made those. We were at every meeting. We're not behind, guys. I keep hearing this thing of we should have known this before. I looked at the schedule. We're doing right where after all the things that got settled with the lawsuit, where we should be. So even though we'd like to know all of this today, we're not going to. It's going to take us some time. But I don't think there's anybody out there that needs to be concerned that we are going to do anything that's going to cost the city more money. We voted all this down just last week, 2 weeks ago, because of the money, okay? Because we know our job is to stay within budget, and you know that's your job. So I have a lot of confidence in that, because I've heard lots of people say, well, it's going to be over budget. Well, it won't be, because it won't exist if it's over budget. We can't do that. It's real simple.
And understand, my request wasn't that I expect to have all the answers today. That wasn't at all where I'm going. But I would like to be in the loop
I believe the commission needs to be in the loop, not just at major milestones. You know, and we have an in the loop that Randy sent out, and I think you did a report once that ended up in the loop. So for me, that's the kind of, you know, just so that I know if I have a question, I call you and I talk to you about it, but that I am very comfortable. I feel very responsible, and I want a comfortable flow of information.
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Cooper?
No, I don't think so. I think that's it.
All right. My only comment is a general one. I continue to be amazed at the phenomenal resources we have in Winter Park and how fortunate we are. I continue to be amazed at how well we do manage many, many, many things in this city. And I would like to encourage all of us to be sensitive to the judgments that have to be made by the commission and to respect the process that we all go through when we're faced with certain decisions, some of which are of a magnitude that are extremely small in the overall picture of the greatness of this city. With that, the meeting is adjourned.